So Steve, are you here? Okay, great. Steve Modemeyer is the Senior Strategic Advisor with the Seattle Department of Planning and Development. He's going to provide an overview of Seattle's new landscaping requirements for their commercial areas. One other thing to note is that this webcast is being recorded, and the PowerPoints will be posted afterwards. So I know you don't have to worry. You can still have people's PowerPoints, like presenters' PowerPoints after this. So, Steve, go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, thanks. I hope everyone can hear me okay. What I'm going to do is talk about Seattle's Green Factor, which is a landscape ordinance that was adopted in the commercial areas of the city, and briefly talk about where it came from and how it's been going so far since we adopted it, which was about a year ago this month. The history of the Green Factor is that, in as I understand it anyway, in Berlin about 10 or so years ago, they were looking at watershed planning and trying to figure out a way to recognize the role that urban areas play in watershed function. And so the Green Factor was developed by a fellow named Carlo Becker, who the city of Berlin has adopted, which basically said if you have new development or redevelopment of a certain size, then it has to replace some of the missing ecological functions through the use of landscape. And the way it works, let me just briefly explain why, which is the second slide here. And this is probably true everywhere on the planet, but certainly in the Pacific Northwest where we are, we were, at least in our habitat, were, you know, covered with forests, and then we, of course, removed all that forest, and the idea is, can we recreate some of that? And there's a couple big reasons for that, and one is that by removing all of that forest, we removed a huge amount of surface area that used to intercept rain, and also...
Excuse me, I hate to interrupt you, but I can hear some conversation going on in the background. Is that disturbing anybody else?
Yeah.
Yeah, could everyone please put their phones on mute by pressing star 6 or using your mute button? Thank you.
Okay. And I won't have mine on mute, so if there's any noise now, it may be coming from me. But the point was that by removing vegetation, we removed a lot of the surface area that used to be in our native landscape. And the surface area was actually intercepted a lot of rain. And also the plants themselves, you know, evaporated a lot because that's how they operate. You know, they're like they evaporate into the air, and that's how they pull in nutrients. And what's happened in Seattle and probably elsewhere is that literally the amount of runoff that we get has exploded tremendously. And this runoff or stormwater runoff drives all of our costs for all of our sewer improvements, all of our stormwater improvements, and all of our natural area restoration activities are almost all dealing with this enhanced amount of runoff. So we're looking at something like more than 30% increase in the actual water we deal with, because it used to evaporate back into the air or used to be absorbed into the ground and then evaporated through the plants. So one of the ideas that we're looking at is, can we increase the surface area and the green activities and also stormwater runoff and integrate it with our most dense urban areas? And as I'm sure most of the folks on this call know, landscapes and vegetation provides a huge array of benefits. And in Seattle, up until the Green Factor, we basically thought of landscape as kind of an aesthetic amenity or something to screen out parking. And we would often waive it in our particularly dense urban areas like commercial areas. But now that we look at this list of benefits that come from vegetation, you know, it absorbs carbon, it releases oxygen, it captures dust, it helps muffle sound, it's habitat, property values increase, people love it, they actually are willing to pay more. It helps buffer the, as you know, the high summer heats by providing shade, and also the active evaporation, it provides cooling, and so it has an urban heat island effect. It also helps buffer buildings so that they're insulated both from the highs and the lows of summer and winter temperatures. And if you use green roofs or vegetated walls, that can also increase the life of those membranes or the building cladding by limiting UV access and also the expansion and contraction due to heat and freezing temperatures. So there's a bunch of cool things plants do, and so we're saying landscapes are not just an aesthetic amenity, they're part of the environmental function of the city, and we want to return them even in dense urban areas. One of the ways that we do that is really recognizing a bunch of things about it. One thing we did is we took the German system, which is identify kind of landscape strategies and then multiply them, give them a factor that you multiply by. And one of the things we heard from our folks was that they really valued the landscaping that's done on the street itself. So when we set up the system, we required or we allowed the property owners to count any sort of improvements they do in the public right-of-way towards meeting their landscape score. The idea being it would be more visible and also it would it wouldn't just benefit the building residents but benefit the whole community. And so things like visibility help count, as well as lots of alternative versions of what vertical vegetation is. And when we looked at on vertical vegetation, which we're going to hear more about, it provides a lot of the same benefits that a green roof can provide, and so we really upped the score to encourage people to do that, and it's become one of the most popular ways that people meet the green factor score, because it takes up the smallest amount of footprint of the parcel, but provides a lot of green in a narrow footprint, so it's been popular as a technique. And of course, we're encouraging it to climb, to hang down, or to even be on trellises. The way that it works is that you figure out how much landscape is dedicated to various uses, and I know it's a little hard to see this, but basically if you've got a lawn area, we'll give you credit for 2/10. For every square foot dedicated to lawn, you get 2/10 of a foot. But if you've got way over on the right, if you've got a vertical green or green green roofs, then you get the highest score per square foot dedicated to those uses. And one of the key things that we've done is we've really encouraged layering of plants, because that's the way that our native systems exist. So if you have soil that's deep, that counts. If you then have a shrub layer, that also counts. If you have a tree canopy above that, then that also counts. So you can start counting multiple scores for the same square foot if you've got the layering going on. So this is probably a little hard to see, at least it is on my computer, but this is an electronic worksheet. It's basically an Excel spreadsheet that's locked. But what it does is it's an iterative tool that the designer uses to determine the score of their project. So they download this sheet from us. Then in that top left box, they put in the square footage of their parcel. And then as they're doing their landscape designs, they fill in these other boxes, and this sheet will automatically give you the score, how you're doing on meeting the green factor.
Can I interrupt for one
yes.
second, Steve? I think people can increase the size by pressing S5, and if you go to full screen, you can really see the sheet a lot better.
Okay.
Just to
That's helpful.
F5, and then press F5 again to return to the old screen. Sorry.
Okay, no, that's helpful. This is an Excel spreadsheet, and in a way it becomes kind of a game, because you do, you know, you look at your project, you design it, then you add up the score, then you plug in the numbers, and then you go, oh my gosh, I don't even have the target. And in our commercial areas, it's 0.300, which means roughly the equivalent of 30% of your parcel covered with vegetation. But it's not exactly that, but that's kind of roughly what it means. So... but what we found, one of the engineers in town did a lot of this work. He applied the German biotope area factor, which if you Google, you can find the English version on the Berlin website on that biotope area factor. But anyway, he applied that to some of the lead buildings in Seattle, some of the buildings that had been built, some of our green buildings. And they were coming in with a score of something like 0.15, 15% to 17%, some of them even less than that. And so even our green buildings were not even halfway there for what we now want all buildings in the commercial area to meet. And this is a requirement, so they must meet it. But the way that they meet it is that they go back through and they look for areas where they could put vertical greening, which was typically not used. A lot of people are choosing to put in green roofs, and a lot of people are putting in permeable paving because we also allow credit for paving that that's infiltrates into the ground. When you're in the worksheet, the Excel worksheet, which is on the seattle.gov/DPD, which is Department of Planning and Development, /Green Factor. When you go to that worksheet, if you hold the cursor over over the little boxes, a little definition window pops up and tells you exactly what the definition is for things to fit in that. So we try and have it be interactive that way. Once the designers are done, they submit not only the worksheet like that, but then they also submit this other sheet, which basically identifies each planting area and how the score is being added up. And so our plan reviewers have appreciated that it's fairly easy for them to review. They look at the landscape design, and then they look at these call-out boxes, and then they compare them onto this sheet and see if they really add up to the score that the worksheet predicts. And so then they can kind of do a little ground truthing and kind of go, can you really get two trees in that little spot? Or, you know, if you said 22 trees in that little spot on this particular sketch, you know, they'd go, wait a minute, I don't think so. But it's fairly easy to apply. However, if you're the designer, there's a learning curve, and the first time through, a lot of people get pretty frustrated because they know how to do design and they know how to fill out all the other forms we have, but this is a whole new thing. However, the learning curve is fairly quick, and once people get over it, then they kind of get very adept at, in a way, gaming the system, not to beat it, but the idea is, you know, how can I meet my client's needs and the city's need for this score? What's the most cost-effective or the most exciting way that we can meet the green factor score? So there's a lot of creativity and different solutions, obviously, with every project. So this is a project that you know, has the kinds of things that we're looking for. We're encouraging like on the right-hand side, you'll see the layering of the vegetation and the ground cover, and then a tree canopy, and then we give credit for the, you know, the growth of the. On the left, you see a wall with some vertical greening, and then also more layering. Ideally, inside there'd be more permeable paving and things like that, and then potentially green roofs and things like that added to the project. So I'm kind of raced through it, but basically, here's what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to maximize the vegetation potential of these parcels and the right-of-ways. We're trying to reward layering of plant material. We also give credit if you're using drought-tolerant plants and or using rainwater harvesting to water those plants. If you have existing trees that you have to preserve or you want to preserve, those count. And we encourage you to plant larger species of trees because that maximizes the canopy cover and the benefits. We give credit for visibility, meaning anything visible from the right-of-way gets a little bonus point. And then we let the developers kind of pick their own way to go. There's some developers who said, I hate green roofs, I don't ever want a green roof. And we just said, fine, then do it without a green roof. But other people, you know, go head right to the green roofs. But what we're seeing is a lot more green roofs, a lot more vertical vegetation, and a lot more permeable paving, and then just a general increase in the thoughtfulness on landscaping. Maybe I should open it up for questions.
Hi, this is Demetra at Sarasota County.
Hi.
Hi. I've been on your website before. It's a great program. Is there a kind of diversity of credits that the applicant can take, or is it one standard form of credit?
What do you mean?
Well, would they be able to get impact fee reductions or something of that nature?
Uh-huh. No, actually, we ended up just making a requirement. You either meet the green factor score or you don't get to build your project.
And I move to where you live.
Right. And a lot of people, it's really inspired a lot of people to meet the score.
Imagine it would.
This is Kathy Deal, EPA Region 9. What about the use of native species over exotic?
Well, we're not Often natives are in the drought tolerant list, but we're not particularly calling out natives because it's such an eclectic urban landscape that we're kind of, giving up on that. It's certainly allowable if the developers want to do it, but it's not one of the ways that you jack up your score unless it's part of your drought tolerant species list.
Hi, this is Jeff King from DC. How does this relate to the green area ratio that I've heard about? Is it basically the same thing? Or?
Yes. Yeah, and we actually started off calling it the green area ratio, GAR, because we're government officials and we like to put acronyms. And that didn't inspire us too much. And then we called it the green area factor like they do in Malmo, Sweden, and that was GAF. And our director said, you're not going to call this GAF. So we ended up calling it the Seattle Green Factor, but it's the same, it's the child of the same progeny or progeny of the same parent or whatever the right term is.
Hi, this is Jared at the Alliance for Community Trees. Do you know of any laws or regulations that are using this in any kinds of ordinances or laws?
Well, it's an ordinance here in Seattle, and it's the only one that I know of in the States, but we are also expanding it, or at least we're attempting to, into the multifamily zones of the city, which will greatly increase the amount of the city that's covered by this. So as we kind of go through our zoning as a city, we're adding this in to expand its adoption. But and those are all in ordinance, and they're all part of the law. But I don't know that of anyone beyond Seattle, at least so far.
Where can I go to get a copy of that?
It's on the website that I mentioned, seattle.gov/DPD/greenfactor.
Thanks.
Steve, it's Demetra again. How does this tie into, I understand that there was a fairly recent zoning ordinance that was enacted requiring builders and developers to calculate the greenhouse gas emissions of the structure that they're going to build?
Mm-hmm. We haven't quite got there yet on that greenhouse gas issue, but what we are doing is we're evaluating how we would calculate the greenhouse gas impacts of various development proposals or zoning strategies. And then we're going to start regulating within the next year or so to find a way to deal with, since greenhouse gases are now a pollutant, then they fall under our normal pollution laws. And so we feel like we need to start when we're doing our SEPA or NEPA, whatever it's called where you live, our environmental evaluations are going to have to start including that. And the green factor isn't explicitly a carbon strategy. I think it heads in the right direction, but it's not nearly what you would need if you were really going after carbon. So I think there's other work ahead of us.
This is Kathy from Region 9 again, and the State of California has been working on a guidance, CEQA guidance document related to that, and I could probably give you a contact if you'd like. The name doesn't come to mind at this moment, but if you want to get a hold of me, I'm at 415-972-3996, and I'll get your contact on that.
And we have been looking at California. County has looked at that
been.
As well.
Okay.
But I think those are, this is really just an emerging and extremely important work for all of us.
Right.
Yeah, this is Ash from ARB, California. Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. One of the things that's been kind of has occurred to us and something that we're moving towards doing for new developments or thinking about doing is this idea of climate baselines, or if you like, greenhouse gas baselines, or just actually figuring out what's the greenhouse gas signature of whatever building you happen to be in.
Mm-hmm.
This idea goes part and parcel into these fancy little things called climate calculators.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you all seen multitudes of those guys, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So my question is there any thought in Seattle or elsewhere about coming up ways for actually creating some kind of a signature climate signature, not just, saying how much or whatever, just reporting baseline CO2 or greenhouse gas signature of buildings or things like that?
You know, it's still kind of being worked on, and it's very early, so I would say the answer is no. I'm not saying we're saying no because we don't think it's a good idea. I just don't think we've evolved that far yet. But we are looking at a whole bundle of activities that go from how we use conservation, how we look at alternative sources of energy generation, thermal and electric, how we look at zoning and the impacts of the way that people arrive at the buildings, as well as the embodied energy in the buildings. So we've kind of got it parsed out in a bunch of different ways, which are all supportive of the concept, but I don't think they're quite rolled up the way you're suggesting.
Okay. Now, there's another question that comes to mind. You know that green roofs and or white roofs are kind of in something of a competition. So the question is, if somebody doesn't want to do a green roof but is willing to do a standard, what using cool roof materials, a cool roof, mm-hmm. Does he get to do that?
Well, they can definitely do it. We wouldn't give them any score for meeting their landscaping requirement. But we would if they were doing a vegetated roof. We also give credit towards meeting your drainage score. You have to meet certain drainage requirements for new buildings. And so if you're using things that control runoff, like permeable paving or vegetated roof, then those can count towards meeting your requirements that the utility calculates. But the cool roof is a good thing, but it's not part of our landscape score.
Okay. And in your tree requirements, do you have a standard select tree type assessment of tree species that you recommend so that the terpene and isoprene emitting species are not inadvertently planted?
Well, that's I was going to say yes until you got to those last two points, which I don't know what the answer is to those. But we do have a list of street trees that are approved of various sizes and by the species, at full growth. And the larger the species, the higher your score. And then we let the landscape architects or the designers, if they're not in the street right-of-way and planting trees, they can select and then they can either pick from the list or do an equivalent tree. But I don't think we've used that that last criteria, the ISO something.
You haven't been using biogenic VOC emissions as one of the criteria?
I guess not. I don't know anything about it.
It's Demetra again. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know that there's a website select tree, but that seems to indicate as though there's an accepted institutionalized standard only for the state of California. That
right.
Outside of that state, the impact of the BVOCs hasn't been kind of universally agreed upon because of climate, wind, other factors?
Actually, the emission factors are fairly universal. And although the SelectTree database is not complete because we haven't yet come up with a terpene emissions database for isoprenes, and isoprenes are critical for generating ozone.
Yeah, I was just doing a lot of research recently on SIP plants and perhaps the integration, and there was a lot of discussion on both sides, actually.
Yeah, most of the data that comes for SelectTree is from Benjamin et al., and the databases that have been established are kind of standard. Even NCAR has adopted some things like that. NCAR, I'm sorry, the previous speaker. NCAR stands for National Center for Atmospheric Research.
You are right, however, that the extent to which the VOC emissions at ozone concentrations would very much need to be modeled. It would depend on meteorology and local conditions. So you're right that in different areas they'll have different effects.
Oh, certainly. I mean, in Atlanta, planting a red oak will have a far more significant effect than planting a red oak in Seattle.
Well, that's really interesting news to me. I'll definitely follow up on this. SelectTree is the name of the website you mentioned.
Yes. This is David Hitchcock. I don't know that SIP modeling accounts for actually tree loss that happens in urban areas, which is probably more common than net gains and concern about what species of trees to plant.
that too is an important issue. In fact, there are efforts at Sacramento Metro Air Quality Management District and SMOD and others to talk about tree planting as a means of obtaining SIP credits. Although this ideology has been tested in Los Angeles and has not entirely been accepted or received in favor either by us or EPA Region 9. But it's an idea.
This is Eva. I have two questions. And one is, Steve, can you give us a sense of how many buildings to date have actually met the requirements and how many you're projecting per year? You know, I'm trying to get a sense of implementation. And then my other question is, you know, what's the biggest obstacle? Can a developer say, hey, this is just way too costly and we're not going to do it? Or, you know, I'm just wondering about obstacles.
Yeah. Well, I think it was about somewhere under 100 buildings that were built in the last year in Seattle. And they haven't all been built because it just went into effect January 20th of 2007. So, and that's very early in the master use, MUP stage, master use permitting phase. So a lot of the buildings are still just getting constructed now. So there's less than 100, probably about the same number this year, unless that our local economy is still pretty strong. But if it tanks, that would lower. If we expand, which I'm hopeful we will, into multifamily, that'll multiply it by, you know, a factor of 5 or 6, I would think. So there'll be, you know, I don't know, maybe 300 to 600 buildings a year within a year or two. But we're still just now starting to we have a couple grad students that are going to audit the first batch of buildings and see, you know, are they really building what they said they would, you know, how's it look so far. And then we're going to kind of try and do that annually to see how they perform. And there's lots of factors for why performance could be negated. They could maintain it in a way that removes the layering, or they could tear out the plants, or there's lots of things that... Yeah. On the obstacles...
Getting effect and...
I would say that the there has been resistance from the development community, and in part, one of the ways that we're doing it is we're introducing the green factor as we go through and basically upzone some of these areas. So we're creating higher density and we're removing parking restrictions to encourage transit use, and those are both very valuable to the development community. And we're saying, and the one thing we want back is an enhanced vegetation. So it's, you know, they might save $1 million on parking on a building, and then we might want $100,000 back for planting, and they kind of forget the million and remember the 100,000. So we're, you know, constantly trying to put it in that context of it's a package deal. And so the costs are roughly from 2/10 to 1% of total building cost.
Thank you. Maybe one more question, and then we should move on to Anton.
Hi, this is Mark Johnson with Futurity in Chicago. And my question is, I'm just wondering if you can elaborate kind of on this last slide where it talks about rewards and if that's calculated kind of on top of the green factor or how that works.
Well, there's a kind of two categories. There's kind of categories where you just put in your actual amount, and then there's some square footage. For instance, if it's visible, any of the square footage that you get credit, like on this the sketch here that shows the little red car and then the tree and then the little trees to the right, you've already gotten, you know, a bunch of green factor square footage credits for those, and all of those get another 10% added on top if they're visible from the public right away.
Okay.
Where, and so there's a couple of these. The other one is drought-tolerant plants and then also rainwater harvesting, where they can apply to, you know, much of the area. So they're like they're considered a bonus on top. But because it's a requirement, it's not nobody gets – they just – it just makes it easier to get to your score if you can achieve these bonuses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, thanks, Steve. Thanks a lot. And everyone, again, the PowerPoints will be posted on our website, and this has been recorded. So if someone missed it, they could see it again or hear it again. Thanks again, Steve.
Oh, you're
now,
welcome.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to Houston's Vertical Garden Grant Program. And Anton, if you want to, take over the PowerPoint.